Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation with Dick White, CEO and General Manager of the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority. Well, Dick, let's be reflective for a minute. Could you look back on the past year and talk to us about some of the accomplishments and the challenges the Metro has dealt with?
Let's start with the accomplishments first. I'd like to be positive as best I can. We had some major projects that we had been working on for a while had come to fruition, and we opened them up to the public. So we had the first expansion of the 103-mile metro rail system. We've been building this rail system since breaking ground in 1969. It took us all the way to the year 2001 till we finished constructing 103 miles. It was a $10 billion investment that's worth $24 billion in today's dollars. Then 3 or 4 years went by where we didn't have any expansion to the system, and last year we opened up a 3.1-mile two-station extension in Prince George's County on our Blue Line out to Largo Town Center. That was very exciting, too. That was a $450 million investment. And we also opened up our first what we call infill station in the District of Columbia, just north of Union Station, which is the first time we've ever built a station in between two existing stations, and had to build it while the whole live railroad was performing. So it was an extraordinary challenge. So those were two very significant events that took place last year. In addition, we had a very historic funding agreement. We had something called the Metro Matters Funding Agreement, where our state and local government funding partners actually executed financial commitments to us for $3.3 billion over the next 6 years to essentially, and these are capital funds, to essentially keep the system as healthy as it can possibly be. We've really been suffering from deferred investment, and the time had been coming. If these investments were not made in short measure, we were predicting that there were going to be some pretty negative consequences for the system because of its aging and the serious overcrowding on the system. What were some of the challenges? Some of the challenges were the derivative of the phenomena where our system has been aging. 60% of our rail system is 20 years of age or older. And if you don't defer in your assets, you're going to get a lot less reliable service. And that's happening at the same time that the growth on the system has been huge, 33% ridership growth in the last 8 years. And we have insufficient capacity on the system. If you ride the trains or even our buses, you know how crowded they get. Put that on top of last year where we had a series of what I call some unfortunate incidents that took place in the system, some reliability problems, some safety-related incidents, some well-celebrated situations where the performance of our frontline employees were not as good as they should be. So we kind of came through that year suffering some serious perception challenges, where people were not quite understanding why the quality and reliability of the service that they had been getting from the metro system was kind of falling down. And this was at the same time, it was coming on the heels of a back-to-back fare increase. We had gone 8 years without raising our fares, and then we had to raise our fares twice in the course of 2 years. So obviously, what the customers were saying, I'm paying more and I'm getting less. And that presented some serious challenges to us, which is really kind of the things that we're working on right now in this calendar year, where we have a real sharp focus on what is called the back-to-basics commitment to the organization to make sure that we are doing everything we possibly can to enhance the reliability of the service that our customer gets and to improve our ability to relate to our customers, to communicate with them, to make them feel like their needs are being attended to and that that we're listening. And there's a great deal of kind of what I call opening up of the metro system, making it more responsive to the public, more transparent in how we do the public's business. You know, our current chairman, Dana Kaufman, who's the Fairfax County Board of Supervisors, is the chair of the Metro organization this year, and he has launched a series of initiatives that are really designed to try to restore and take back some of that lost credibility that took place last year.
And speaking of Dana Kaufman, I know in preparing for this, I was reading some of the things he's talking about, stressing the need for accountability in 2005. What are your plans to stress accountability?
Yeah, I mean, again, it comes back from that phenomena where people, you know, weren't quite understanding what was going on with the system. And clearly, at the same time, people were talking about the system needs more money. There's been a lot of talk about the need for dedicated funding. So clearly, the issue of accountability is on people's minds. It's front and center with me and my management team. And we are doing a number of things to try to make sure that the organization kind of has that kind of public accountability. The most essential ones are kind of how we've organized ourselves to do our work. And basically on the rail system, we've moved forward with what we call a decentralized management of the rail operation. We have been a very hierarchical organization where these departments and these functions come up in a pretty hierarchical way, and we really have not delegated down to the lower levels where the rubber hits the road, where the people who are actually there on a particular line delegated with the responsibility and the authority to ensure that that service is as reliable as it can be. So we're in this movement of restructuring our organization, changing the mindset of how we do our business, lowering authority levels and responsibility levels, and trying to make sure that the people at that level have the resources that they need to get the job done. Another part of our accountability is opening ourselves up to be examined by others. And we have brought in three separate peer reviews to come in to bring in experts around the country. First, a rail peer review that came in, and they've already given their report to our board of directors. We've had a group come in who's also done the same kind of work on the bus side. Their report will be coming in the next couple of months. And then we've done a third review on how our police department goes about doing its work, balancing that very difficult tension between enforcement and ensuring that the rules are properly enforced and that behaviors are addressed, while at the same time not overreacting to incidents that result in some of these unfortunate behaviors that took place in the last year or two, where some of the actions that employees of our organization took were perceived as being overly aggressive types of actions.
Are reviews like this, the peer reviews, standard processes in transit systems?
It's standard, yes. I wouldn't say a lot of people avail themselves to these reviews. Actually, the people who have come in have said that it takes a lot of courage to ask folks to come in to take this look. The ground, I make sure that they understand it's an unconstrained review. We're not going to get the benefit of it unless we can tell them, we want you to come in here. Here are the general areas we want you to look at, but we want you to absolutely tell it to us in the unfiltered way. And we got a lot out of this. First of all, they're very inexpensive when you ask your peers to come in. The great thing is that you're not paying for their labor costs, because their transit system back home is graciously making their time available to you. And you just pay for their direct costs of transportation, hotel, in food and the like. And so these reviews are done at the lowest possible cost, but they have very high yield, because you have people who are your peers, who are dealing with the same kinds of problems that you're dealing with and different types of transit environments and different systems, and they bring their experience and their skill set and their perceptions into your organization. And we're very happy with the review that we got. It did validate a lot of management changes that we were in the process of making last year, and it was very timely in that they gave us a few points of view that we should be considering when we make our final decisions on a couple of other things.
We talked about 2004 and 2005. Let me ask you a little bit about 2006, because I've looked at the budget, and one of the things I noticed is that it talks about no fare increase plan for the next 2 years. How did you reach this conclusion?
Well, I think we've reached the conclusion as a staff, we are recommending to the board that we would hope there's a way that they can, inside of their decision-making process, to see if we can't stabilize the fares at least for a couple of years. If we've gone to back-to-back fare increases, if our reliability has started to trend down a little bit, what we need to do is to kind of regain the confidence of our customers, you know, make them feel like the service reliability is starting to come back up, and I think we need to give them a little bit of breathing time before we go back to them and ask them for another fare increase. And hopefully within that time frame, we've kind of made some of the necessary changes to bring some of the improvements that we want to bring along. I must stress that the board has not made that decision yet. The fiscal year 2006 budget is in front of them right now. They have come pretty close, I think, to reaching their conclusions on it. The budget then gets mailed out to the state and local funding partners who actually pay our bills, and then we seek their commentary, and then by June, the board adopts the budget. In this budget, there is no fare increase contemplated, so that's a good thing. We've only talked about the budget year after this, which is the fiscal year 2007 budget year. I would say that it is the general sentiment, not the unanimous sentiment, but the general sentiment of the board that they would like to see if we can't stretch ourselves to not have a fare increase that year also. We've laid that out as an objective, but there's no commitment at this point in time.
Well, given that the systems has needs, you talked about deferred investments, how do you prioritize projects and funding in the budget?
Well, it that's one of our more difficult challenges. We, as I said before the outset, we have $1 billion in operating expense. About 58% of that actually comes from fares that customers pay and from miscellaneous non-fare box revenues. The other 42% or thereabouts is actual subsidies that we receive. So more than $400 million comes in the form of operating subsidies. On the capital side, that entire amount is subsidized by federal, state, and local sources. The prioritization that we attempt to do is different depending upon whether you're talking about capital or operating. On the capital side, we really have our assets laid out by the age of the asset, a condition assessment of the asset, comparisons against a normal state of good repair replacement cycle, and we've laid out when we should be investing in replacing new equipment or making substantial rehabilitation. Unfortunately, we've fallen behind the power curve on that right now. We are underinvested to the tune of $500 million on our capital assets. So we're into the deferral stage, and that's the beginning of a very slippery slope if that remains unaddressed. Fortunately, this Metro Matters funding agreement that I spoke about, which was a big accomplishment for us last year, has made a six-year financial commitment to restore those deferrals and try and get us back up to a steady state, but there's no guarantee of continuing those funding commitments beyond the 6 years. On the operating side, the decisions largely are made by what is the perceived affordability that people have with respect to what is the reasonable growth in our budget that people believe is acceptable for funding. Fortunately, we have not been talking about cutting service. We've been adding service along the way. When operating budgets get very, very tight, the dicey equation becomes, do you raise fares and or do you do service cuts? And although we've raised fares in our last two budgets, we really have not done any service cuts. We've been expanding our service. So the systems around the country that have begun to suffer the worst are those that have had to have the double whammy of both a fare increase and a service cut.
That's an interesting perspective. What are the management challenges of increased ridership on the Metro system? We'll ask Dick White, General Manager of Metro, about this when our conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.